You guys hear me? Yeah, okay. My name is Kevin Smith. I was born in 1976. My father was in the military, so we lived several different places. I lived in California, lived in Peru, Indiana, lived in Texas for a while. I had a normal childhood growing up. My parents tried to instill good values in me. My dad was always, teaching me about a man's word and honesty and, basic skills that a person needs to live in society, live successfully in society. I had a brother who was born with a disease. The disease was ataxia telangiectasia, and basically, is it a degenerative disease that attacks the nervous system, attacks every system of the body? I mean, when my brother was 9 years old, he was confined to a wheelchair, and he stayed there until he eventually died when he was 16 years old. But having a brother like that, kids are cruel. I mean, they made fun of him, and I was always a bigger kid. I mean, hard to imagine that probably, but, I was always a bigger kid, so I would stick up for my brother. When people would make fun of him, they'd have to fight me, or, they'd have to listen to what I had to say. And I was a good fighter. I didn't lose often. But what that did is it, every time somebody would make fun of my brother and I'd have to fight and I'd win, it kind of make my head swell a little bit. I knew that I was a tough kid, and if somebody had a problem in school, they'd always come, "Hey, will you go beat this guy up for me?" And be like, "Yeah, I do." So you guys can sort of understand how this mental attitude develops. I was big, I was tough. It seemed like things didn't go wrong for me hardly much. In high school, I was a popular kid. I played on the football team. I was a captain of the football team, and I wrestled. I didn't lose much there. When I moved to Texas, in Texas they didn't have wrestling. They had boxing. You were on a boxing, if you wanted to do some kind of extracurricular activity, it wasn't wrestling, it was boxing in Texas. So I boxed, and I did well. In 1992, I was the heavyweight champion of the 55th annual Coca-Cola Golden Gloves Boxing Tournament. Boosted my head up a little bit more, made me... I developed this invincible syndrome. Moved back, I was back in school, or high school, playing ball. I was on the homecoming court my senior year. Everybody wanted to hang out with me, or I thought everybody did anyway. So I started going to parties, after game parties, just parties in general. And, eventually drugs started getting involved in that. Went from smoking marijuana to doing cocaine, LSD, pretty quickly. I understood the money to be made selling drugs. So I started selling cocaine, started using a lot of cocaine. We had a shipment coming in that we didn't have the money to pay for, so we went and robbed a guy's house, me and a friend of mine. We went and robbed a guy's house. As we're in this guy's house, he comes home, puts a .38 snub nose in my face, and says, "What are you doing in my house?" I was like, looking for somebody else, obviously. And he's like, "You have a seat." Called the police. Police came, arrested me. I went to jail. I went to prison for 4.5 years over that. I got out of prison. Let me back up a sec. When I was in jail, I met a couple guys, area ministers, that would come to the jail and talk to me. I got really turned on to God by these guys. And for a short period of time, I was being faithful. I was praying, you know, I would worship in my cell and everything. But, you know, the jail life, the prison life kind of got overwhelming and, you know, it overtook me and I put all that stuff to the wayside. This guy whose house I broke into, was a fireman in Peru. I'll get back to him later. I got out of prison in 1999. I met my wife, Angie. We started going to Mexico Baptist Church in Mexico, Indiana. Things were perfect for us. I mean, in my eyes anyway, you know, we were going to church on Sundays. Still not really living for the Lord, but I'm looking. You know, I was looking for it. We had a lot in common. I mean, we hit it off really well. She had a different outlook on things than I did, you know. In my home, I'm the king of my castle, and, you know, that's just the way things are. Which is still that way today, but before I took advantage of it, you know, I took that as to mean, hey, you know, what I say goes, and that's the way it is. So, in 2003, I started a business. The business hit the ground running. I mean, everything fell into place perfectly. 2 months into it, we had come up out of debt, and we were able to set money aside to do things in the business. You know, we were able to make payroll. I still had a little over $23,000 personal debt. So I told my wife, I was like, you know, I want to get this erased. I want to get this taken care of. She says, you know, well, how are you going to do that? I said, well, you know, when I was in prison, I learned how to make methamphetamines. And she's like, no, no. I was like, man, you know, everybody I know or knew knows somebody that is or is themselves on methamphetamine. I told her, I said, you know, this stuff's selling for $100 a gram. You know, I can make an ounce of it for $100, you know. And she was just dead set against it. But, you know, I said, hey, look, you just sit over there and look pretty. Let me do my thing. You know what I mean? Leave me alone with it. Well, that didn't go over real well with her. And so our relationship kind of started to grow apart. I was out late at night, you know, I was doing these things. I started running around on her, met up with another girl. One day I went home and I told my wife, I said, you know what, I don't want to be married to you anymore. It wasn't because I didn't love her, but it was because she wouldn't let me do what I wanted to do or was always giving me flack about what I wanted to do. So, you know, I told her, I said, hey, look, I'm out of here. You can have everything, but I'm leaving. I had a daughter born in 2003. I had a daughter born in 2003, Gracie. I left her. I moved out December 18th. December 24th, I decided, well, I'm going to go stay the night there so I can wake up with my daughter in the morning and have a normal Christmas. You know, she wasn't quite adjusted to me moving out. So I did, you know, things didn't go very well. But I had Christmas with my daughter that morning. The next day I left, moved out, and I moved in with this other girl. We started manufacturing and selling a lot of methamphetamines. Probably 4 months. 4 months after I moved out, my wife calls and she says, "Hey," she says, "we got a problem." And I said, "What's that?" She says, "I think I'm pregnant." I'm like, "Yeah, okay. You know, you're just trying to get me to come back home. You know, I'm not going to fall for that trick." And she's like, "Well, you know, I'm being serious. This is what I didn't pay any attention to it." 5 months after that, my son's born. I'm still out selling, manufacturing methamphetamines, you know, living this party life, doing what I want to do, spending money on what I want to spend it on. Well, this life catches up to me. In 2004, police kick in my door. I'm kicking this girl's door, the girl I'm living with, kicking her door. They found a little under 40 grams of methamphetamines, a couple thousand dollars in cash, weed, paraphernalia, loaded 40 caliber pistol. So I got sentenced, or I went to jail. I called a friend of mine. I had a $100,000 surety bond. I called a friend of mine and I said, "Hey, man, I need you to come bond me out of jail." He's like, "Your bond's $100,000. I said, "Well, I don't care. You know, write a check, do what you got. Write a check, and I'll take care of it." He's like, "Well, you know, if you say you'll do it," I said, "I will." So he did. He wrote me a check. He wrote the bondsman a check for $10,000. Got me out of jail on a $100,000 surety bond. I was out of jail. Still doing the same thing. We got the check covered. I got arrested, or I got sentenced to prison. They sentenced me to 40 years in prison. While I was in prison, I got involved with the Aryan Brotherhood. I joined the Aryan Brotherhood. It didn't take long for me to rise in rank. 2007, I became president of the Aryan Brotherhood in Indiana. As president of the Aryan Brotherhood, I was required to do a lot of bad things. You know, people got hurt very bad. A lot of bad things happened because of that. I was approached by the Aryan Brotherhood to do something that I wasn't going to do. In retaliation for my refusal to do that, I was attacked. I was stabbed 17 times. I was on the 5th Range, Michigan City. I was stabbed 17 times. I went down 2 ranges, tried to wash all the blood off of me so I could make it back to my cell. I got down to my cell, passed out, lack of blood. All, you know, I was bleeding out, passed out. Took me to Wishart Hospital, or took me to St. Anthony's Hospital, stitched me up everything. I went to an infirmary unit. While I was in that infirmary unit, which I was in there for close to a month, while I was in that infirmary unit, I developed a blood clot in my leg. So they gave me a lot of medicine, you know, IV medicine to get this blood clot taken care of. Come time for me to be transferred, you know, I try to tell them, "Hey, you know, my leg's still swole up, still hot to the touch." And they're like, "You know, we've given you enough medicine. That blood clot's gone." I said, "Well, okay." You know, so I got shipped to Pendleton. I was at Pendleton maybe a month. This blood clot, they found me dead, or not dead. They found me laying in my cell, unconscious, unresponsive, cold to the touch. Correctional officer did CPR on me. I went to Wishart Hospital. What had happened was the blood clot had went to my lungs and cut off my oxygen. Then another piece had broke loose and went to my brain. Had me have a bleed in my brain. I was in a coma in Wishart Hospital, intensive care unit. While I was in this coma, I had an experience happen to me that changed my life forever. I felt this presence around me, and I felt this was a very dark presence. I felt like it meant me a lot of harm, and I was terrified. And I'm not, you know, I don't get scared of scary movies, things like that, you know, but I was terrified, and there was nothing around me. I mean, there was nobody to turn to. So I cried out to God. I said, "You know, God, please help me. You know I've not been the best person, but I need your help here." Off in the distance, I see this light. Whatever is in this light, this thing that's around me is scared of, doesn't like. This light gets closer to me, and I see it's my wife. So my wife walks over to me. My ex-wife. We had divorced. My wife picks up, starts stroking my hair, telling me, everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be okay. So I wake up from the coma. I'm still in prison. I have a tube hanging out of my chest because of this blood clot that was in my leg. Got infected very badly with staph, which infected my whole body, shut my kidneys down, so I had to have dialysis. My wife, I'm in a prison ward of Wishard Hospital. I cannot have visitors. My mom comes to see me and she says, hey, my mom had to get a court order from a judge to be able to come see me. She comes to see me and she tells me, next time that I come see you, I'm going to try to get Angie to come, get added to this court order. I said, well, why? She's here every night. And she's like, no, honey, that's not possible. And I said, it is possible. She's here every night. She kisses me goodnight, every single night. My mom was like, no, that's not happening. Okay. So let me get back to this story. That event right there, my wife coming to me every night. My mom goes home and she tells my wife that. My wife starts crying. Automatically she starts crying. My mom's like, what's the matter, honey? And she's like, Kevin's almost down there dead. I've been praying to God that he send my spirit to him because I know it's going to comfort him in his time of distress. Every single night, whether it was a dream, whatever it was, I know she was there. She was by my bedside every single night. She'd kiss my head. She'd stroke my hair. Tell me everything's going to be okay. My mom and my wife try very diligently to get me out of prison. I got a 40-year prison sentence. They're not going to let me out, Well, lo and behold, it happens. They bring me back to court. They say, we're going to let you out. We're going to put a bracelet on your leg, but we're going to let you out of prison. So we'd all been praying that prayer. I was actually challenged by my wife, pray an impossible prayer. And that was my impossible prayer, let me out of prison. Of course, I didn't really think it was going to happen, But it did. I spent 6 years in prison, 6 years on a 40-year sentence, and I was released. Since I've been released, my wife and I have remarried. We are living back together. I was asked to be on the board at my local church. And I looked, when they asked me that, I was like, really? You want me to be on your board? my history, where I've been. And they're like, yeah, we do. But that's the amazing part of it. From where you've been to where you are now. And not only that, we know you're going to say what's on your mind. So I said, yeah. The prayers that have been answered in my life, prior to these events taking place, I tried to take care of everything myself. I did. Or I would ask a friend for help. And that was my first line of defense. Since that time, there have been so many prayers answered in my life. When I got out of prison, I had a friend of mine at my house the night I got out wanting me to come work for him. Nobody knew I was getting out. He was at my house wanting me to come work for him. My job, a lot of my income depends on extra hours calls. My wife's a nurse, so we get by. But some things happened where we were not getting a whole lot of extra calls. Christmas coming up. My wife and I, we were like, what are we going to do about Christmas? And I was like, well, honey, kids will be all right. That's not what Christmas is about anyway. She's like, yeah, go explain that to them. And I said, well, yeah, you're probably right, you know. Well, I had a friend of mine send me a message. And he says, hey, you know, can you call me? Me and my wife prayed about it. We prayed about, you know, my prayer was for extra work, things to happen at work. You know, I know it probably sounds horrible, but for more people to be broke down or more people to wreck their cars or whatever, because that's what I do. But I prayed for work to pick up. Well, this friend called me, and he didn't call me. He sent me a message on a social media site, and he says, hey, can you call me tomorrow? He says, I got something I want to talk to you about. He said, but you have to tell me, you have to promise me that what we say is between us. And I said, yeah, you know, no problem. Well, I thought that he had somebody in his family that was involved in drugs. He wanted me to talk to him, try to get him let out of that. He says, hey, man, he starts asking me a bunch of questions. So I answer his questions, and he says, hey, he says, you know, he said, you've been talking to all these people, you've been doing these things. He said, you positive light in the community, in our community, and we grew up in the same community. He said, so, he said, I do this every year. He said, I'm not going to take no for an answer. He says, I'm going to write you a check for $1,000 for your family for Christmas. Answered prayer. And just, you know, I guess if you take nothing else away from me today, it is the power of prayer and the power you hold over someone else's life through prayer. You know, prayer in my life now is the first offense. That is first thing I do, you know. Sometimes I hit my knees. Sometimes I'll, you know, close my eyes. You know, I stay my day in a constant prayer. You know, if I'm at work working on something that don't go right, you know, I might say a little prayer. Things go better. If I'm looking for my car keys and I can't find them, you know, I say a little prayer. Bam, there they are. That's the message I want to give you guys today. Prayer is probably the most valuable weapon you have in your life, in your family's life, in your friend's life, and everybody you come in contact with. I'm going to close with a little bit of scripture. This is from Psalms 107. Give thanks to the Lord, for He is good. His love endures forever. Let the redeemed of the Lord say this. Those He redeemed from the hand of the foe, those He gathered from the lands, from the east and the west, from the north and the south. Some wandered in desert wastelands, finding no way to a city where they could settle. They were hungry and thirsty, and their lives ebbed away. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and He delivered them from their distress. He led them by a straight way to a city where they could settle. Let them give thanks to the Lord for His unfailing love and His wonderful deeds for men. For He satisfies the thirsty and fills the hungry with good things. Some sat in darkness and the deepest gloom, prisoners suffering in iron chains, for they had rebelled against the words of God and despised the counsel of the Most High. So He subjected them to bitter labor. They stumbled, and there was no one to help. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and He saved them from their distress. He brought them out of darkness and the deepest gloom and broke away their chains. Thank you.